Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, home of New York's craft cider. I love New York. Plan your getaway at visitithaca.com.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to another episode of Cooking in Mexico from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. We're really excited. I'm Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
And we are very, very over the moon, muy entusiasmados, porque we have a really awesome, awesome guest here that's going to be talking about butchery, Mexican butchery in specific, and how to fabricate all the different cuts that are so special to all different kinds of dishes throughout Mexico. Of course, our guest today is Mauricio Ureste. I hope I said that properly. He is also the brand developer and marketing of his own company. Basically, Mauricio has been in the culinary industry for over 25 years. Meat is definitely his passion. He has this beautiful sort of business to help and guide different corporations and companies around the world in the U.S. Hispanic market and Latin America about how to work with unbelievable meat and its unique, trendy culinary experiences for global markets. And he's recognized as one of the greatest chefs in doing this. And this is really exciting because I think this is a subject matter that a lot of people don't know about. They don't understand the different cuts and the varieties and the distinctive ways that meat is butchered in Mexico, especially. So we're really excited to have Mauricio joining us. Bienvenido, querido. Thank you for being here.
Well, you know, this was the hardest of all guests to find because mm-hmm. I've been trying to find a specialist in this field since we started, actually. And mm-hmm. and it's not just me. Rick Bayless, too, I said, you know, I think I found somebody. And he said, oh, well, you have to give me his name because it's a specialty that very few people have. So we are honored and thrilled to have you here joining us today.
Thanks a lot, you know, for your invitation. And hopefully we could do a very good seminar talking about Mexican beef. You know, on my expertise, I've been learning from all over the world with different chefs and different, I would say it's a huge difference between food service and retail market of beef. So we need to understand, first of all, that all the beef breeds come originally from Europe. I mean, the main breeds, which would be Angus, for example, or Hereford, or all the breeds. So all the main breeds that we use in America, from Canada to Argentina, they mainly come from Europe.
Well, in our cattle ranch, we had Cara Blancas de Chihuahua. You know, we had Hereford cattle, and they're called Cara Blanca because they have a white face.
Exactly. And we're still doing it in Chihuahua in Mexico. Actually, Chihuahua and Sonora, they are the main cattle lands in Mexico. In Mexico, Chihuahua and Sonora, they export cattle to the States. And they also export beef or processed beef to all over the world, including Japan, China, Russia, you know, different countries.
Mauricio, and I love that real quick, just so everyone's clear with their listening, I want you to continue. But the majority of beef that's consumed in the New World or in the Americas is European varieties. I love that. Please continue.
Exactly. Exactly. So we call Bos Taurus. Mm-hmm. Genetically, the original name of those breeds is Bos Taurus. So we have the other DNA breeds, which comes from Asia. They are called Bos Indicus. So all those Bos Indicus is the ones with the hip and the ones that they really don't marble the beef, you know? those cattle are used to do the hard work, and they are not really tender beef at all. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, it's a beef that is still being produced in Mexico in some areas, especially south and southeast, because of the weather. So the weather is really making a huge difference when you're producing a high graded beef or low marble beef.
Yeah, like Cebus. Yeah, you're talking about Cebus?
Exactly. Cebus is called Bos Indicus, the DNA for those cattle, and they come from Asia, from India. Mm. So that's the main difference. The rest of the animals mainly come from Ireland, from France, you know, from Central Europe, is the one that we still use at some point with the bullfighters, you know. Mm. That the real Bos Taurus, when the rest of the animals really come from, you know, that's the original DNA.
Yeah, Taurus.
So it makes a huge difference.
Taurus is bull.
Exactly. So in Mexico, we have, as you know, different weathers and different areas. So in the north, we have a really cold weather in Chihuahua and Sonora. That's why Chihuahua and Sonora, they are able to produce European DNA cattle. Just as Cara Blanca, as you mentioned, Sarela.
Angus?
Angus, for example, Simmental, Limousine, all those breeds.
Charolais.
That come from Europe. Charolais, uh-huh. And in the other hand, you know, the south and southeast, they produce the Bos Indicus. Mm. You know, Cebu and Cebuinos, they are being produced in Tabasco. They are being produced, you know, in different areas in Mexico because of the weather.
Mm.
The warmer the weather is, you know, the less marbling the animals are.
So what do they use for the yuntas?
Let's explain what that yuntas is, mommy. Okay, come on.
They use them in the fields, you know, to make the how do you explain it, Mauricio?
In the ground.
Yeah, like
in the ground. They use it in the grounds to help, you know,
make the burrows, make the furrows in the fields.
Exactly. So they use cebuino, they use cebus, you know, to do so.
To do work.
So mm-hmm. They are the hard workers animals.
That's interesting to mention. With colder weather, they're going to be more inclined to put on more fat, more weight, so that you can start to marble, right? If it's hotter, if you travel through Southeast Asia, you kind of see these little skinny cows running around, and that's because it's hot, right? They're not skinny cows, but they're, you know what I mean? They don't have that beef and that sort of aesthetic that everyone expects when they see cattle.
And you know, like that.
You're right.
The Herefords are very hardy, because if you have a drought, which you have often in the north, they will even eat the mesquite, leaves to survive. You know, and they dried grass clumps or whatever, but they make it. They're hardy.
Exactly.
They're very hardy cattle. So what do you think is the main difference between Mexican butchery and American butchery?
Well, I think it's the cuts that we use, you know, because in Mexico we use definitely the entire carcass. You know, we use everything. In the States or Canada, for example, they don't eat a tongue. You know, a beef tongue, for example, in Canada or some areas in the States, you don't eat it, you know. Mm-hmm. And in Mexico or Asia, for example, in China or Japan, they eat, you know, the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best dishes in Mexico is the beef tongue, you know.
Of course.
The barbacoa made of beef tongues or the head meat.
I love that.
Exactly. It tastes delicious, you know. I've been in some of Mexican restaurants, for example, in Vancouver. One of my friends, Yair Tellez, opened a restaurant there in Vancouver, and he was offering beef tongues. But nobody knew what about beef tongue, you know? Mm. So they were not even able to try it. So I was, you know, talking once I visited the restaurant there in Vancouver, and I was telling the guests, try it. You know, once you try it, you will see that it's mm-hmm. a spectacular, the flavor, the tenderness that the beef tongues could provide.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid, you know, of listen, it's a beef tongue or it's a beef meat head or whichever. you need to try it first. You need to see a difference between one cup and the other. Some of them, they provide a really good fat. For example, in Monterey, we use the beef lips for barbacoa.
So the lips.
The fat on the lips is spectacular, you know, the flavor that it provides.
You know what I love? Are tacos. Oh, cheeks.
Cheeks. Beef cheeks as well, you know. We use it at barbacoa. But for example, Zarela, even in Mexico, you know, if you go north, like in Monterey, in every store on Sundays, they offer beef lips, you know, mm-hmm. for barbacoa. But if you go to Mexico City and you try to find a beef lips for barbacoa, you won't find it. They have never tried, you know. I've been talking with different chefs in Mexico, and why don't you try the beef lips for you doing your barbacoa? I said, well, I've never tried it. Why? You know?
I just got the
Mauricio, no. Let me tell you, it's hard to find a good pair of lips.
Let me tell you.
To find a good pair of lips, man. Oh, man, we struggle. Forget Sundays.
But you know that tongue has become very popular because of the taco trucks. You know, here in New York, everybody has, the food trucks have tongue. And my mom used to make it in Pipián.
Remember, well, you are a good friend of Ricardo Muñoz. Ricardo Muñoz is doing the best pipián that I've ever tried, you know. Mm-hmm. And he has been using different cuts for pipián.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at the end, that is makes a huge difference in the beef market, you know, because you can sell, for example, the tribes, you know, in different areas in Mexico, which that cut is not being used anywhere else except Asia and Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
So the tribes, which you have tried the menudo.
Of course. And I think it's important that we make a distinction here, because I think, so we're just clear, that the idea of that, one of the biggest differences, I think, between American butchery, we're used to having in America big cuts of steaks, right? These monsters, these 12, 16-ounce steaks, you know, whether they're New York's, whether they're ribeyes, T-bones, et cetera, et cetera. But in Mexico, everything is cut very thinly and kind of fabricated in a very different way, depending on the recipe. Correct, Mauricio?
Correct. And you know why? You know why? Because 40 years ago, for example, you were not able even to find, you know, a marble beef in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And people didn't know.
So everything was about a bistec or milanesa, you know, very thin steaks coming from inside round, mm-hmm. or gooseneck, which we call in Spanish pulpa negra or pulpa blanca.
Mm-hmm.
So all very thin beef cuts. They were made to produce milanesas or cortadillo, all those Mexican dishes, because in the south and central part of Mexico, the cattle, they don't marble, you know?
Yeah, as you said.
So they are mostly coming from Bos Indicus, only in the north.
And they don't age.
Exactly. That's why in the mindset of people in Mexico said the best beef in Mexico comes from north. Yeah, it comes from north because it marbles, because of the weather, because of the breed. Okay? So we need to understand that our country, Mexico, it has a huge difference in weathers. You know, in
terrain,
they have mountains, in terrain, you know. So it's all about land, you know. Not only for beef, for any product, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For any product, it's all about land. It's all about weather.
Terroir.
So that's the first thing in terroir, exactly. The taste and terroir. So you need to understand that, first of all, when you try to get the ingredients. So that is making a huge difference.
And also the meat is not aged in Mexico in general.
And now they are aging, you know. But 30 years ago, of course, they were not.
Exactly.
The first companies in Mexico which started importing beef from the States or Canada or Japan, they were established 30 years ago, no longer than that. Okay?
Gotcha.
And it's, it were all about the NAFTA, you know?
Yep.
with the NAFTA, we got like exchange, you know, with products from Mexico going to Canada and the States, products from Canada and the States coming to Mexico. So it helped a lot, you know,
yeah,
to make a really good exchange of different products. Mm. Nowadays, as I was telling you, you can find in the States U.S. beef made with Mexican cattle raised in Chihuahua and Sonora, or you can find Canadian beef with cattle raised in the States, you know, or you can find, so you can, it's a exchange, you know, on all the attributes from each land. It's the terroir which makes a difference.
Now, do we have, in Mexico, there is an equivalent to the USDA, correct? So before beef gets to come into the across the border, there needs to be an inspection and there needs to be a certification. Is that correct?
Correct. In Mexico, yeah, we have no grades for the beef.
Yeah.
We start doing it nowadays with the Mexican beef producers. But in Canada, they use the prime, AAA, AA, and A. In the States, they use prime, choice, select, or standard, no roll beef. In Mexico, we don't have that grades for now. Because the only land who could be using those grades would be Sonora and Chihuahua. And maybe some other small regions in the north.
Gotcha.
Because of the weather.
You keep on mentioning milanesas. I think we have to define that. That is like a breaded cutlet, like a breaded veal cutlet, but made with beef, very, very thinly sliced. And they make the best tortas that ever.
Yes.
You mean sandwiches.
It's made with inside rounds, which we call pulpa negras in Spanish. And those pulpa negras or pulpa blancas, which is the gooseneck. So they cut it really thin steaks to do the milanesas or to do the bistec. That is called bistec.
Yep.
So
bistec. B-I-S-T-E-C. Do you know mochomos?
Well, yeah, I know mochomos. Most of the cuts they're coming from in Mexico, we use a lot of pill knuckle as well. Pill knuckle in Spanish is pulpa bola. So that is called the piña. The piña is part of the leg. So the three different muscles that we have up in the leg is the inside round, is the pill knuckle, and is the gooseneck. So which is pulpa blanca, pulpa bola, and pulpa negra. So all of the main dishes in Mexico.
Which is the osobuco?
Well, the osobuco is coming from the leg, you know,
from the chambarrete, no, or those further down, right?
From the legs, yeah. And another well-known dish comes from the roast meat. So the roast meat is called suadero. Have you tried the suadero, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they are really well-known tacos.
Tell me what it is again. Please describe it to me, suadero.
Suadero, the roast meat, it's come from the part of the stomach, you know? Yeah, they are the muscles. It's like inside skirt and outside skirt. So inside skirt is the arrachera. The common arrachera that we know, it comes from the muscles that are in the stomach of the cattle.
Is that the skirt steak?
Yes, mommy. Yeah, the skirt steak. Arrachera, mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, arrachera. And we know the entraña. You know the entraña, which is really well-known cut from Argentina, Uruguay, and in Mexico we use it as well. It is the outside skirt. So it's part of the skirt in the animal, and it's a muscle that comes in the inside out of the stomach area. Wow.
And then, but this is interesting because it's called suadero, right? So the idea that this cut is named after a dish, no, or style of taco, no, or is it, how does it become that name? Is the question, right? So suadero is a style of taco.
Well, we need to ask Ricardo Muñoz, you know, about the name.
I know. Exactly.
Well, maybe we need to do our research. Well, it's a question that we need to answer, you know, and find
That's
out
interesting.
The name for the suadero. It's an interesting question.
And how about the brisket? How's the brisket? What is the cut of
the... The brisket is el pecho, so the chest.
Yeah.
And the brisket is mostly used in the north part of Mexico. Okay. And it's a winter cut, you know, because it's a slow cook.
Yep.
Cut because it's kind of hard. So it takes time to get a good brisket, you know, in the oven. So it's mostly used in the winter time. In the States, I would say south of the States, in Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting because now we're talking about all these different cuts and how they're used, right? And I think for me, I find fascinating is the idea that some of these different cuts are used for specific dishes in Mexico, and that's how you name them, right? So he had just spoken to, right?
And for example, the most tender, you know, cuts in a carcass are the ones that they are not really, the animal is not really using at all.
Of course, in the back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the back. The loins. So the tenderloin, strip loin, ribeyes, you know.
I think that's something, I think it's important to mention. You're right. That's why where the animal is not using a lot of stress, it's actually the softer part. And I think a lot of people don't even know that. And I think that's very important to mention. I appreciate that, you know.
And we need to mention that the grates, the ribeye is the one that provides the grates in the animal. So in the slaughter plants or harvest plants, they cut, you know, the carcass between 11 and 12 ribs, and they expose the eye of the ribeye, okay? So they use an infrared camera to check out the marbling. Once you check out the marbling with an infrared camera, it provides you the grade for the carcass. So that carcass would be a prime carcass, would be a choice, or would be a select. So it makes a difference. Even in Canada, it would be AAA, AA, or A, you know, that is the one that provides. So the king of the cuts would be the ribeye. So ribeye is the one that grades the animal or the carcass.
What do they call that dish with that with a big rib, honey? There's, you know, it's a dish, they use the entire rib. Do you know, there's a particular...
The tomahawk. The tomahawk. Yeah, the cut, yeah. Yeah, it's a big steak,
I love that.
Yeah, the tomahawk.
But we have different cuts, you know, made with the tomahawk. We have the scorpion, which is the ribeye split in half, and then you have the huge bone coming from the rib, and they call a scorpion cut.
There you go.
And in some other restaurants, they call mantarraya.
Andale, the mantarraya. Yeah, exactly. Like the stingray. I love that.
You know, one of the things that I discovered is that brown meat isn't really used so much in Mexico, but more finely chopped, no? Like minced meat?
Yeah. That comes from the shoulder. You know, the shoulder cloth, it provides the best 80-20 ground beef. You know,
exactly.
For the hamburgers, from the meatballs, from any, from the stuffed chile, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chile relleno that we call is made with
picadillo.
With shoulder block.
Picadillo.
Exactly. Picadillo.
So is that what you would call the diez millo or no?
Yeah.
Or like the chuck, right? The shoulder, right? The paleta, no?
The paleta is the shoulder block. The diez millo, it has part of the same muscle, you know?
Gotcha.
You should write a book about this.
Part of the neck.
You should write a book about this, Marisa.
There's a lot of books. I was planning to do a book, you know, with Ricardo at some point. But he has been doing a really great book of recipes. He has been discovering over 600 different recipes exclusively using beef in Mexico with different cuts.
Wow.
So he has been doing a really great job, you know, saying in which area in Mexico they are using, for example, the stomach, which areas they are using the shoulder cloths for ground beef, which areas they are using their the roast meat and everything.
Yeah. Well, wow, it's amazing.
My mic is sitting on Ricardo's Gastronomica Mexicana, so I can't move it to look up Suadero. because then I'll get the mic off the line and forget it. It'll be a lot of trouble. But he's the one that recommended you.
Well, yeah, I know. And he has been one of the teachers that I have been learning with, you know. He's the master of masters in
no,
Mexico.
No, he's amazing.
With all the Mexican culinary cuisine, and we are all admiring his work, you know.
I shot with Ricardo 20 years ago. I mean, es un tesoro. He's just an absolute treasure. And we're so excited. We're going to have him on. We're waiting for him to have his schedule open up. You know, it's funny that we talk about these different cuts. Just on a side note, I went to England in London to work. And on Sundays, they do a roast. Okay? It's a big thing in England. Uh-huh. Have you been, Mauricio?
Okay. Yeah, I've been once in London.
Okay.
Only a couple of days. Yeah.
So on Sundays, they do this roast where they make the Yorkshire pudding. And they use the rump roast, okay? So basically, it's the culo of the pig, I mean, of the beef. And they get so excited about it. And I'm like, it's good, but they serve you like a little steak of ass, a culo, you know? And they love it. The English, they enjoy it. I go, okay, you know, the rump roast. Yeah.
Even the tail, you know, you get
the
really,
yeah.
Yeah, like rabo de res.
Rabo mestiza is the name of the dish.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it's a really nice, you know, flavor, you know. Mm-hmm. All the keratin that it provides is almost the same as lips, you know, the same keratin. That's why it makes a huge difference on the flavor, I would say, so, yeah. But you were right.
You gotta go from the tail to the lips, baby.
Well, that's what it's hand to foot. What is it? Lips to foot?
Yeah. I'm the same keratin, you know, at the end. I would say so.
I love it.
It's funny, but it's true, you know.
It's true.
You were talking about England, and Canada has been influenced by France and England, you know, mm-hmm. So most of the dishes that they normally use and the beef cuts are the same, you know, that they are being used in France and England as well.
I was just reading an article about the hoof being used for something. I think it's a big thing right now, eating the beef hoof.
Yeah.
The foot. It has all that wonderful gelatin, isn't it? I want to believe that they use it to make, I mean, obviously the gelatin that you get from the foot is used for other things, Mom.
Yeah,
like it has this unbelievable amount of gelatin.
You know, when I was working, with a Canadian company, I used to name one of my friends, Federico Lopez.
I know Federico well. He's a good man.
And he used to do a dish made with ribeye. So he was using the fat of the ribeye to do the risotto.
Oh yeah, well that's the one that we had at what was the name of that restaurant in Mexico City, where they made that risotto with marrow.
With tuétano,
and then the exactly. Oh my God, that was one of my absolute favorite. Was he the chef?
No, Federico wasn't. No, I don't think so.
No, Federico is from Maya Riviera.
Yeah.
He's doing catering in Maya Riviera, but. I was just mentioning it because he's using even the fat from the ribeye, the center cut, and the spinalis, you know. The spinalis became recently, I would say, in the recent years, about 5 or 6 years ago, like a trendy cut, you know, for the high-end restaurants. The spinalis.
What is that?
Which is the cap of the ribeye. In the ribeye, you have three muscles. You have the center cut, and you have the cap. So the cap of the ribeye is the spinalis. So the spinalis in a higher restaurant could cost you like the triple times the cost of a ribeye. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So Federico was doing the spinalis with the center cut and the risotto made with the same fat of a ribeye. It was, you know, spectacular.
Oh, no, he's an amazing chef. Fed, the man.
So he was also using the silver skin, which some of the chefs used to drop it. The silver skin, he used to put it on the oven, and he was doing some kind of, chicharrón.
Exactly. Wow. Just, I love that.
Just to add flavor to some soups and dishes.
Wow.
So
I find that amazing.
At the end, everything is useful, right?
Yes.
If you know how to cook it and you know how to apply every muscle of the carcass, even the fat, you know, silver skin, everything has to be used. The thing is, you need to learn how to use it.
Absolutely.
You know, when Aaron was about 9 or 10 years old, he was with Cafe Marimba. He was in the kitchen with the chef, with Tony, who was from like Queens. And Aaron had learned how to take off the silver skin of whatever it was pork or something like that. And Aaron, Tony was from Queens, so he had this real heavy accent, you know. So then Aaron is telling me that he had learned, and he said, then you take the cleaver, you know.
the cleaver. I see hablan ellos. The cleaver.
They take the cleaver.
Con su madre. See, yeah. Yes, Mom, thank you.
Well, that was cute.
It was cute. I think it's important to mention too that chefs need to start to get back into the art of butchery.
Back to basics.
And the basics. And I think it's very easy for chefs nowadays to order everything already pre-cut. Everything already, la mano de obra is already done for you. I think it's very important for chefs to get back and order whole cuts of meat and break them down themselves. I think it's extremely important.
Exactly. You know, one of the problems at the culinary schools that I've been finding is they don't practice enough, you know, the butchery. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Mexico. I'm not talking about Europe because you know, for example, nowadays I'm in Merida working with my culinary dad, I would say so, which is Alex Rudin. Mm-hmm. Alex Rudin is a well-known chef from Mayan Riviera.
Yeah, I know.
He worked in the past for Hyatt and different hotels. He opened a new restaurant here in Merida, which is called Sacha's.
Mm.
So I came just to work with him on the working for the meats, you know, with the meats. Mm. And he's doing, for example, lamb hand, which is a lamb rack with the five bones exposed, like a hand. I will be sharing the pictures of it with you. And he was the first one which I was learning from, because 20 years ago, he was providing seminars with the beef that we were importing from the States, Canada, or any other country. He was the one providing the beef seminars to all the rest of the chefs all over the Mayan Riviera. I remember almost 15 years ago, that one of the first seminars were providing in Eshkar. So Alex was the one explaining how to use the carcass, how to do those things. And talking with him, he was telling me, well, in Switzerland, at the culinary school, they teach you how to do the butchery. It's one of the first things that you need to learn before becoming a cook, you know? Because if you tell him you are a chef, he said, no, I'm not a chef, I'm a cook. So
yeah, same thing here. I'm a cook, you know?
Since you mentioned lamb, I want to know if you know this dish. At the ranch, we used to take the lamb tenderloin and wrap it with the milk tripe, like really tightly, and grill it. And it was called machitos.
Yeah. Machitos is a really well-known dish in Monterrey.
Yeah.
They're also making a Monterrey, yeah.
Yeah.
I would kill for some of that.
It's delicious. You know, in Monterrey and Saltillo, is also a well-known chef. You have seen, obviously, the series from Netflix, which Ricardo is participating in.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Chefs.
And they you're not talking about Memo González. You talk about Memo
Guillermo González Beristain, which is a friend from Monterrey.
Yeah, of course, Memo.
And La Manzana, which we call another chef,
mm-hmm.
Humberto Villarreal. Con La Manzana.
Of course.
That's his nickname. And he's talking about machitos as well.
Yeah.
So you see that this chapter, you know, graphics that explain you all the details about machitos there made in Saltillo and Monterrey. Yeah.
We have family in Saltillo.
Do we?
Yeah.
Cool.
Didn't Tia Marina and them live in? No, they live in Calvillo. I'm sorry, not Saltillo. Pardon me.
It rhymes.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, helping you to plan your next getaway. Ithaca has waterfalls and wineries, art and theater, outdoor recreation, and family fun. The area is famous for its glacier-carved gorges, co-op-run businesses, and cultural influences from Cornell University and Ithaca College. Plus, you can't beat the beauty of Cayuga Lake, the largest of the Finger Lakes. Beyond 150 waterfalls and some of the region's best hiking trails, Ithaca is cider. The area is well known for its local cideries, which are leading the way in America's cider revival. You can hear from the region's cider makers directly on HRN's series Hardcore. There's something really special about Ithaca's climate for cultivating delicious apples steeped in history and terroir. Let Visit Ithaca help you plan your next trip to this hub of food, drink, culture, and agritourism. Home of New York's craft cider, I love New York. Get started at visitithaca.com.
I think one of the things that is important to mention is, Mauricio, where can people get more information about Mexican cuts and Mexican beef? How can they bring it to their restaurants? How can they support it? What are some of the things that we can share with people?
Well, I would be able to provide, you know, links where people can download information, you know, about the beef cuts. And I don't know if you are able to share my email.
Absolutely.
Or even my phone. If somebody has any question, I can provide information.
And yeah. do you have a website?
Could be able to download. Because we have different sites, you know, but if you are looking for a special topic, I will be able to tell them, you know, where to get that info.
Yeah. Mauricio, just use your email, your website. Don't give your phone number. We have a lot of creepy fans, okay? Uh-huh. We have fans that will do anything, okay? Protect yourself. I'm only joking. Un guapote así como tú, un cuerazo, brother. Te van a seguir. We'll make sure that you share your email, right, and your website, Mauricio, so people can get more information about how to support Mexican beef and all of the beautiful things that come with it. And then you can educate them as well. Maybe give some links to all the chef friends that we have in common.
And all the different dishes that you can only make with those cuts.
You know, one other thing that I would like to mention is I've been talking with different people from who has been in the government, for example, from Chihuahua, because I was born in Chihuahua. Actually, I'm from Parral, the south part of Chihuahua. And I think it's a lot of things that we need to invest, you know, in Mexico. One is to have a marbling
standards.
Quality assurance standards in Mexico. And we could start with Chihuahua and Sonora, which are the mainly European breeds, to start the quality assurance. Some of the ranches in Mexico, they do this kind of assurance because they export like cattle to the States. So they regularly dose it. But the thing is, we need to invest, you know, in education, and the government needs to invest as well, you know, to make this assurance. And I think most of the chefs, like Ricardo and some others, they will be pretty interested on support those ideas. So hopefully in the coming years, we could do so. And we could make a huge difference on understanding Mexican beef, the way that we use different dishes, different beef cuts, and have like an entire map, you know, on the different areas that produce different kind of beef. And that would be really helpful, not only for the students, I would say for the foodies that really travel to try any certain dishes, that would be exceptional to have that information, right?
Well, you know, I have a big question because in the ranch, we used to have the corridas, you know, the cattle roundups. And that's when we separated the calves from the mothers. And I remember at night, the cows, you know, wailing. And then you took the steers to the border and then sold them to America, to the United States. So, I mean, if they're Mexican, but they're really raised in the United States, aren't they? I mean, how does that affect the meat? You know, because they buy the steers.
It doesn't affect, you know. I think we are in the global world when everybody's able to sell, you know, the best products anywhere.
Yeah.
Since we are importing beef from Japan, for example, we are importing beef from the States, from Canada, they are able to buy cattle from Mexico or from Canada. So the thing is, we need to make a quality assurance, you know, not only with a few ranches in Mexico. So we need to set up like a national quality assurance.
Standards.
Standards,
yeah, that we don't have for now.
Is there anything like a Wagyu beef in Mexico?
Yeah, we have Wagyu in Mexico, just as Canada and the States. But mostly in, we have 100% Wagyu, and we have the half-breed Wagyu Angus, which is also produced Canada, States, and Mexico.
Wonderful.
But only a few ranches. So we have that beef as well.
Well, Mauricio, I'm going to be down in Cancun for the Food and Wine Festival coming up shortly. So hopefully I can see you there. I know that you're in Mérida right now, no? Estás en Mérida.
Yeah, I'm in Mérida. I'll be there from Thursday to Wednesday in Mayan Riviera for a week.
So hopefully I'll be able to see you there. I'm coming down to Cancun to cook. So hopefully I'll be able to see you there.
When you're going to be arriving?
Oh, man. Well, it's for the festival. I don't even know. Hold on.
With David Amar, right?
Sí, mi rey.
Okay.
But hopefully we have a chance to catch up. And look, I want to say we are blown away. We are so enlightened by all of your information. You're doing such valuable work. I think what you're doing right now to promote Mexican beef, all the cuts, the dishes, as you said, is something that you have. You can corner this market. You can be the face of it. Because we need you, Mauricio. We need you to be able to promote our culture and our beef. And I think you're doing something so special. So we're very grateful for having you here today.
Qué honor.
Qué honor, mi rey.
I'm grateful for your invitation. And no. I want to provide a really thankful. I'm really thankful, you know, because of your invitation and because of Ricardo was talking with me about Zarela. So he was the one that really made this happen at all. So I want to thank Ricardo as well, and both of you, of course.
Of course.
And this for hosting me here.
And this was not tacos de lengua.
Because
you know, we have that saying that says tacos de lengua when somebody's like talking too much about putting on too much cream in their tacos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a saying.
Tacos is the best. Yesterday I tried tacos of castacan. Of course, you know what is castacan, right?
No, I don't.
Castacan is that we call made with pork, the carnitas. You know?
Yep.
Like some kind of a chicharrón.
Yeah.
So it's a really well-known dish here in Mérida, castacan. Mm-hmm. It's made with cerdo pelón.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Which is the breed, original breed from Yucatan. So it was, you know, one of the best tacos that I have ever tried.
You know what we didn't talk about, and I think it's good? We didn't talk about mountain oysters.
Yeah, bull's balls.
The testicles of the steers. We used to
put them on. Que toda madre que no hablamos de ellos.
Well, they're really good as well. You know?
Oh, no, they're tasty too. I've had some. But there's a lot of jokes that can be thrown around. But you know what? It's all good. But it's good stuff.
The bad jokes.
Mil
gracias.
Mil gracias, mi rey.
Muchas gracias.
Te mando muchos abrazos, y mándale muchos saludos al jefe Ricardo, por favor, ¿ok?
Claro que sí.
Gracias, mi rey.
Un abrazo.
Hasta luego, ¿eh? Hasta luego a todos.
Gracias. Bye.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.